Hello, and welcome to the Yearly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the best and brightest comics of the year, as well as discussing what we felt were some of the major missteps. As with our weekly comic spotlight, we'll be using DC, Marvel, and other publishers as our major categories.
We'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Yearly Comics Spotlight number 5 for comics released during 2011. That's all of 2011, which is, for my money, actually a very interesting year. I don't know about you, Bob, but I always have a really hard time making my picks every year, but this time was, I think, a bit harder than usual, because 2011 I thought was really strange because it had kind of a lackluster start. There wasn't a lot of big things at the beginning of the year. I think Marvel had more of a quantity over quality push during this year. We then get that mid-year reboot from DC. And, you know, at least for me, it almost came down to kind of too few great choices for Marvel and DC. I mean, they had a lot of really good, solid things, but few in that kind of utterly amazing category. And then from the other publishers, it was almost the inverse, with the back half really having delivered this year, I think, a lot of great, great stuff.
I had a really hard time on my indie stuff. I mean, it's just, I get so many different indie books. And I tend to, stuff that I liked last year, I kind of still like, you know. So it's hard for some of the newcomers to sneak in, but some of them did. You know, there was some new outstanding choices on there, but, you know, a lot of old reliables as well. So, you know, yeah. Marvel and DC, I had a hard time with DC, for instance, not having the New 52 overshadow, you know, my thinking there. Because when I look back on it, it's like really hard to remember, you know, sometimes stuff that happened at the beginning of the year that was really good. And I don't know if that's as much, not that much really good happened at the beginning of the year at DC versus it just gets kind of washed away from your consciousness by, you know, a lot of the new stuff. But, you know, they were, I think, themselves having a bit of a vote of no confidence on that when they did the reboot. And, you know, the funny part of that is that for several months before the reboot, I was not feeling it for a lot of the DC series anyway, because it just seemed like they were, you know, a lot of fill-ins and a lot of just marking time, waiting for Flashpoint to come along.
Well, the fact that we knew a reboot was coming made a lot of those things feel that way. And I think it kind of drained some of the story power out of some of those things that might have been received better, frankly, if we thought that the stories were going to matter. And over at Marvel, I think there was a lot of, well, let's double ship, let's double ship, let's double ship, that kind of, you know, gives a little bit of a burnout on a few of the things. So, you know, you look back, and we'll talk about the numbers when we do the Mayo Report year end, but it was low sales at the beginning of the year. So I think part of it certainly for me, is not being able to remember that far back. And some of it also is the general consensus was at that point, it was just so-so.
Well, it also brings up a point, you know, and it's just, it's something that's unique to Marvel and DC, I think, for the most part, and unique to a certain class of comic fan, although it's probably a decent-sized number of them, at least a very strong minority, if not a majority of comic fans, and that is, you know, does the story matter? You know, there are some people who just read a story and just look for it to be a standalone thing. But for me, when I'm reading something set in a shared narrative universe like Marvel or DC, part of the draw of reading those stories is that they are a part of that continuity and that universe. And the story is building on the mythos of that universe. And it's, you know, quote unquote, mattering. You know, it has some bearing. It's not just a throwaway kind of story that's here and gone. And there's nothing wrong with that kind of story. It's just that most Marvel and DC stories are not like that. I think you find more of those kind of stories that are more self-contained and are just a story when you're reading the indie books. But even those, the ones that I follow for a long time, they have their own self-contained narrative universe. When you look at something like Hellboy or Elephant Man or Usagi Yojimbo or, you know, any of these kind of things, Walking Dead, you know, they have their universe, and the stories remain internally consistent within those universes, and they tend not to tell throwaway stories there either.
Well, I think Marvel and DC versus, you know, the smaller publishers, they're playing by different rules. And by smaller publishers, really what I mean is more the creator-owned sort of a thing. So a large contingent of the Image stuff falls into this category, whereas a large contingent of the Dynamite and Boom would not. And really, with the more corporate-owned stuff, you know, the creators are, in many cases, very passionate, and a lot of cases getting the paycheck, whereas the passion is the driving force for a lot of those titles you just mentioned, Elephant Man, Usagi, Walking Dead, you know, things of that nature, where, you know, it's a singular vision of the creator. Now, maybe he has help pulling, you know, it all together and putting the comic out. Maybe he doesn't, or she, for that matter. But it means that the concept of, well, I just need to fill an issue, doesn't really happen on those titles. Whereas when you've got, you know, 15 titles a month starring Batman or Spider-Man or Wolverine or whatever overexposed character there is, you know, you just need somebody who can fill some pages sometimes. And it makes for a very different dynamic. And for me, the dichotomy I faced this year was on Marvel and DC, I really had to struggle to find what I thought was kind of the cream of the crop. You know, what really did I want to highlight as some of the best of the year or my favorites of the year. And, you know, finding things was challenging. Whereas on the indie side, I've got a couple where I've got, okay, this is a second place and a third place and one or two where it's like, damn it, I can't pick. Because there was a lot of things there that just really jumped out at me. It's like, well, I can't not mention this, 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 or this, you know? So it was both a feast and a famine kind of a deal. I felt there was a lot of outstanding work on the indie side, and that's not to say that Marvel and DC and the other companies weren't delivering too, but not to the degree, for the most part, that I felt on the indie side. I mean, for the indie stuff, there are a lot of things I could really, you know, defend, I think, very, very well and have a lot of strong feelings for. On the Marvel and DC picks, there are, I'm going to go with, on Marvel, it's like I have picks. On DC, for the writing and the character team and the storyline, I'm very solid with those. The art, a little less so, but not, you see what I'm saying? It's some of those where there were a couple of categories, like for the DC, for the writing, that to me, no question, bam, it's this. You know, whereas on some of the other stuff, it's like, well, you know, gee, I don't know. I had to go look at what I'd gotten over the year, got to give it some thought, and even then, you know, because like you said, the stuff at the beginning of the year is a little harder to remember, etc. You know, for me, a great year would be something where when I sit down to organize my thoughts on this, half a dozen picks just jump the mind of, wow, these are just so great. And then one of them really just kind of naturally rises to the top of being just so much greater than those that were so great. You know, for DC and Marvel, that really was not the case for me this year. A lot of it was well above average, was very solid, but few kind of made that breakout category. Now, part of the challenge I had this year, and I'm sure you did too, is just the amount of stuff I'm reading. You know, I went through my shipping lists for DCBS, and I had, I think, 2,255 comics that I got through DCBS this year. And I'd picked up a few other things elsewhere and stuff like that, so even that's not all of it. So, can I remember clearly stuff from the beginning of the year? No, not really. There are a couple that's like, oh, wow, I guess that did come out this year. And that always factors in for me. So, it was again, a very interesting year. And I think very much a game-changing year. Now, that having been said, do we know quite how the game changed and how it's going to play out? No. But between the reboot at DC, Marvel so, frankly, hog-wild on the double shipping issues in a given month, The transition to digital really coming into its own this year. DC holding the line at $2.99 all year. There were a lot of market influencers and stuff at play, and I'm going to say more so than in most years.
You know, DC had a lot of stuff going on this year, and I applaud them for what they did. You know, they had to change the game. They had to make some hard decisions, and they did it. And by all indications, you know, only a few months in, they seem to have been successful with that, you know, with the new 52. And, you know, they have revitalized the DC fan base, although it's funny because I was just in the comic shop yesterday picking up my books, and you know, there were still people, you know, they're like, you know, pulling their Wednesday comics off the rack and stuff, and there's guys that are like, I don't read DC comics, you know, just like get their big stack of Marvel books and on
their
way. But by
energizing the DC fan base, I think that energizes the other fan bases, particularly the militant non-DC Marvel fans. Because they feel they got to step up their game to support Marvel because DC's doing well. You know what I mean?
Right. So what's what were your favorites from DC this year? We were talking about DC.
All right. For me, the easiest one in this area to fill out was the writing. I mean, to me, hands down, George Perez on Superman with the new 52. We get solid done-in-one stories with strong connections between issues that are done-in-one enough to be satisfying just as single issues, yet continued enough to have that wonderful kind of never-ending battle storytelling without the issues just bridging cliffhangers and stuff. You know, when I had talked with John Rood and Bob Wayne in San Diego before Comic-Con, they were talking about how, you know, we're re-looking at it, how we do everything, storytelling, you know, everything and all that. And it really had me excited because I was thinking, wow, they're going to be getting away from the cliffhanger, cliffhanger, cliffhanger ending, you know, of the trade, cliffhanger, cliffhanger, you know, kind of a storytelling, get rid of the decompression and really kind of go back to how I think comics were back more in the 80s, where things just pulled you from issue to issue to issue forever, yet each issue was very solid. And when I was reading the number ones of the new 52, the one that just blew me away was Superman, because it did that. And to me, that's how comics really should be written. They're accessible, they're dense, they have a lot of story, they name the characters, they associate the character names to the faces, etc. And you left the issue feeling like you had gotten solid story. Whereas, you know, we're on issue 4 of quite a few of these, and I'm not even sure the entire teams have gotten together in some of them. So for me, the writing one was the easiest pick of the bunch. How about you? What'd you have for that?
I had a hard time on the writing one. Wasn't quite as cut and dried, because I didn't have just one single comic that I thought was so great, you know, like you did with Superman. And I know, you know, you gave that a 5 out of 5 as your favorite thing. You know, my favorite was not Superman. I was, you know, kind of torn between several writers and people who kind of placed in there. You got Jeff Lemire, who does a great job on writing Animal Man as well as writing Sweet Tooth throughout the year. But, you know, then I look at Frankenstein, and I'm not that hot on Frankenstein, so it's like, okay, well, not him. You know, Scott Lobdell, you know, I like a lot. I've ultimately came down to Scott Snyder. You know, Scott Snyder was my number one favorite because he has done the Swamp Thing relaunch. He's writing Batman, and he wrote Batman, a great Batman arc before the relaunch. He's writing the Batman title now. And he also writes American Vampire, which I know you don't read, but is a fabulous, fabulous Vertigo title. Probably I think it's almost more preferred even over Fables. Probably my favorite Vertigo title right now. So Scott Snyder gets that. And then he writes some indie stuff too, creator own stuff. He's got a series coming out from Image called The Severed, which he does an excellent job writing. But, you know, his DC stuff just standing on its own with Batman, Swamp Thing, and American Vampire, as well as the Survival of the Fittest miniseries from American Vampire that he came out with in 2011, is what caused me to settle on him as my number one pick for the writing
cool
slot. Art was a little more varied because, I mean, there's a lot of great artists at DC, a lot of artists I like, but, you know, the one I ended up having to go with was J.H. Williams III for Batwoman, because he combines the, you know, really great art with just an overall design sense that I find makes him stand out from all the other artists.
I can totally understand that. That's not who I picked, but I certainly was one that I had considered, because, like you said, not only are the individual panels just beautiful, the way he puts them together with that mosaic, that page layout is just really pushing the envelope. The one I went with was Francis Manipal doing Flash, because I think he's doing some brilliant stuff there with the visual storytelling. And for me, what both of those artists have in common, like you said, is they're not just, here's a panel, let me draw what's in it. They're thinking about what they're doing. They're using the visual storytelling and trying to enhance that, trying to expand on that, and not just do what has been done before. Not do storyboards for a movie necessarily, but something greater than that, or bigger than that, or just different than that. So that's something that anytime I see an artist who's really, I think, pushing the envelope, always catches my attention, and particularly on the Flash, because historically, you know, with Carmine Infantino having done quite a bit on that title back in that day, everything from the captions that had fingers pointing to the right stuff and things like that, and a lot of other artists have tried to do super speed effects to different, you know, types and stuff. That's a character that I think, playing with the visual storytelling, there's a lot more competition historically than you get on certain other titles. So again, I was very pleased with what's going on in the New 52 visually in that title.
I can see that. That's a good choice. See some of the writing and art choices on the forum here that are different from ours. There are several people that picked Scott Snyder and J.H. Williams. I see Cliff Chang for Wonder Woman on here for art. I see Jim Lee for Justice League, Grant Morrison writing for Action. I see Brian Azzarello for both Wonder Woman and Flashpoint Night of Vengeance.
That's a good pick there.
Yeah. Kenneth Rocafort for Red Hood and the Outlaws. I really enjoy his art on that book. We've got a Jeff Lemire on here. We've got Paul Cornell for Demon Knights, Bill Willingham for Fables, Brian
Rocafort's
Q. Miller.
Getting quite a bit of comments or votes or whatever here on the forum. That's a good sign.
I got Brian Q. Miller on Batgirl, a couple of people there. Jesus Saiz picked for Birds of Prey, and that is some very nice art on Birds of Prey,
yeah.
I will say. And Nick Spencer for Thunder Agents writing. And then we've got someone like Keith Giffen for OMAC. Which I can see, you know, if you really like that Kirby style.
That's a style that I think is either love or hate. I don't know how many are just kind of indifferent to it. For me, it's not working, but I'm just not a big Kirby fan either. So somebody who really likes that style,
I mean, that's a book that is very, you know, it's like there are a lot of people who OMAC is their favorite book of the New 52. You know, it's just like, well, if you like that, that's great. You know, and I can understand that it is very distinctive, and it's told in a very distinctive storytelling style and a very distinctive art style. And if that really clicks with you, I can easily understand how that's somebody's favorite book.
Yeah.
So what about character or team?
Okay, for this one, this was hard for me because, again, I'm a huge DC fan. There are a lot of characters I just love, a lot of teams I just love. With the whole reboot, they kind of doubled the number of choices almost, it felt like. The one I went with was a bit off the beaten path, but it was an issue I just loved, a team-up I just loved, and one that I don't expect to really see again, which is unfortunate. I'm going to go with the team of Robins from All New Brave and the Bold number 13. This was a gathering of all the Robins from different points in time and just did an excellent job of kind of comparing and contrasting them in a very fun done-in-one can-they-save-Batman story. You know, we had, you know, Tim Drake, Jason Todd, Damian, Dick Grayson, Stephanie Brown, Carrie from Dark Knight. I'm trying to think if there were any others. But, I mean, it was the whole plethora of them. And, you know, I'm a big Robin fan and stuff. And this was just, it was a really cool story. So, for me, that was something that, you know, they went in a very different direction than that title would normally go in, because, again, it's based on the cartoon and stuff. But they had a lot of fun with it and used the team-up very effectively to show that, you know, not all Robins are created equal. Some are better in one way than another. It was just, it was fun. So, that was my pick.
I went with Green Lantern again. Hal Jordan, though.
Understandable. Hard to go wrong with that pick.
I've always liked Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the year of the Green Lantern. I mean, there wasn't like a single story that was outstanding, like, you know, the Sinestro Corps War or Blackest Night or anything. But I still just really love that character. You know, now when I flip over to the storyline title category, you know, there's not a Green Lantern thing that really fits in there. And, you know, for me, it came down to two kind of things. I mean, I could have picked the title. I kind of went with the storyline. And I went with Flashpoint. And the reason I went with Flashpoint was because, as we talked about when we talked about Flashpoint, they did such a good job of, in a very short time, of making a coherent universe where all those miniseries just seem to tie together and build on one another and tell a really enjoyable 3 month long, or maybe did it go 3 or 4 months? Anyway, you know, this 3 month long story with a whole bunch of titles in it, and they just hung together and told a really enjoyable story. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, my pick for storyline title was the Flashpoint storyline, because going in, I had minimal expectations of, gee, 20 side stories, all this stuff. Is really, I felt they were doing a Marvel kind of event in all the wrong ways, but it really pulled together inside of that five-issue miniseries in those 3 months when we had everything else. It crystallized a world that we had never really seen before, and we got such a solid introduction, got to know and care about a lot of those characters, that at the end, okay, poof, it's gone, that's it. But it was great. Obviously, that storyline had major ramifications because it directly led into the New 52. So, you know, to say that that's not a pivotal turning point for DC is to ignore the facts. And it was one of those that really an emotional roller coaster ride going in. I'm like, well, you know, geez, there's a lot of that stuff. And then, wow, it's really great. I can't wait for the New 52 because it's going to be just as good. And well, frankly, the New 52 isn't as tight as a lot of that Flashpoint stuff. You know, I don't know that 4 months in, we've gotten to know as much about the new DCU as, you know, we got in the 3 months of Flashpoint with half the titles.
We absolutely haven't. We absolutely have not. You know, since they knew they only had 3 issues to tell that stuff, I think they packed a lot of storytelling into that. You know, that's being kind of dragged out at a, you know, very slow pace in a lot of the new 52 titles. You know, it's just Justice League's a great example. You know, you're three, four issues in and you haven't even seen the whole team assemble. You know, it's like you're already past the whole length of Flashpoint, and you know that you haven't gotten as much story out of that title. And yeah, you know, I also give Flashpoint credit because I went in not expecting a lot of things. I mean, I only ordered, I think, a third of the Flashpoint titles, and I was flipping through them on the rack, and they won me over, and I ended up buying everything from Flashpoint, which is a huge accomplishment that they should be applauded for, because I didn't just go ahead and pre-order the whole thing sight unseen and say, okay, I'm going to read it. I mean, I pre-ordered a handful of the titles, and they won me over and got me buying those things off the rack.
Yeah. It was something that I think the way they initially solicited could have been done better, because, again, expectations, people went in with a very soured mood, I think. But in terms of execution, they really pulled it off there. So they should be very proud of that and should be trying to duplicate the success of that by having equally tight stories in their ongoings. So what do people on the forum, yeah.
A lot of Batman. as the favorite character.
Not a big surprise there.
Not a big surprise. I see a storyline. We've got that Black Mirror story. That's the story that Snyder did in Detective before the reboot. I see Batgirl, Stephanie Brown, which I can see.
Yeah, fun character.
Scalped as a title. It's a great title from Vertigo by Jason Aaron. Got Aquaman. I was considering that myself. I mean, the Geoff Johns relaunch, Aquaman is very, very interesting. Very cool character.
Yeah,
I haven't
that
seen
one...
quite enough of him yet to declare him my favorite character, but if he goes along like this, he could be my favorite character for 2012.
That was a title that, for me, was under consideration for most of it. I mean, the writing is great, the art's phenomenal, the character's fun. It's a title to watch, certainly in 2012. I would agree with that.
Yeah, we got Morrison's relaunched Action Comics. Got Animal Man as a favorite character. We got Zombie as a great storyline, and that's one that I had forgotten about. That was a phenomenal story, the Zombie storyline. Cut short by the relaunch, and I think also just by general apathy to, something that's not a core DC title being published by DC. We've seen a lot of really great titles get prematurely euthanized for similar reasons. We've got the new Teen Titans group. We've got the Demon Knights title. I think that is absolutely fabulous. That's up in my top five of the new DCs, the Demon Knights by Paul Cornell.
Yeah, that one I think surprised a lot of people.
We've got OMAC as both a character and a storyline, or title rather. We've got Batwoman as a favorite character, the Thunder Agents, the Doom Patrol from, I guess, pre... relaunch, and Cinderella Fables Are Forever, which was a fabulous storyline. And obviously lots of duplication in there. People voting for multiples. I was the only one with Green Lantern on there this year. Green Lantern did not do too well this year.
Well, again, I think that goes down towards a lack of a really particular storyline that galvanized fans around it.
Yeah. Lot of Batman, lot of Flashpoint.
Yeah.
Those are the clear winners in that category.
Not a big surprise there. Now, rounding out our conversation on DC, in terms of 5 out of 5s, I really didn't give, I usually don't give that many, but quite a few of what I gave went to DC this year, with those being Zatanna 12, Action Comics 900, Flashpoint Emperor Aquaman number 1, Cinderella Fables Are Forever number 6, Static Shock number 1, Superboy number 1, Nightwing number 1, Flash number 1, Superman number 1, and Ray number 1. Now, for you, you gave 5 out of 5s in DC to Zombie number 1, Jimmy Olsen number 1, Zatanna 12, Flashpoint Emperor Aquaman number 1, that same Cinderella Fables Are Forever number 6, Flashpoint Batman Knights of Vengeance number 3, Resurrection Man number 1, All-Star Western number 1, Fables 110, Ray number 1, and then when we were going through the publisher spotlight, you also gave them to Animal Man number 1, Swamp Thing number 1, Demon Knights number 1, Superboy number 1, Batman number 1, Aquaman number 1, and I think that was it for those. So, I mean, there were quite a few highlights this year from DC. They did some great stuff. Add to that the business moves they made of drawing the line at $2.99 all year, the day and date digital stuff, Flashpoint, the new 52. DC was really on their game this year, and if they can kind of keep that up, and I see no sign that they can't, it's going to be a very interesting 2012. Shall we move on to
Marvel?
Marvel. This was one that... Yeah, it was really tough for me on the Marvel side because I got more Marvel comics than anything else. I got almost 900 or something Marvel comics, and a lot of those, 936 I think. A lot of those were good, but very few were just, oh my God, this is brilliant. So I had some tough calls here. For writing, I went with Abnett and Lanning for Heroes for Hire, Villains for Hire, because we got a new take on a classic Marvel concept, and the title stayed very accessible and fun with a rotating cast of characters that was very well, you know, handled. So I think they did some great work there.
Yeah, I went with Dan Slott for Amazing Spider-Man.
Understandable.
You know, I'm a big fan of Spider-Man. I've not been as enamored of a lot of the artists they've been rolling through on the title, but the writing has been consistently keeping me enjoying that title you know, quite a lot. Other contenders there, Abnett and Lanning for the same thing that you picked, and also Mark Waid on Daredevil and Ed Brubaker on Cap, and Christos Gage for Avengers Academy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Avengers Academy is an underlooked title, I think.
But, you know, just overall, it went to Dan Slott for Spider-Man.
I can see that.
Let's see who the people in the forum are saying about. I've got some more Dan Slotts. We've got Peter David for X-Factor. He does a great job there. Waid on Daredevil. Kieran Gillen for Uncanny X-Men. Jeff Parker for Thunderbolts. That's one I forgot.
That's
but Jeff Parker
pick.
Is a great pick. He does a great job on that title. We got Rick Remender for Uncanny X-Force and Venom. Got Fred Van Lente for Alpha Flight, Herc, Power Man, and Iron Fist, Chaos War. Fred Van Lente is a great writer. I tend to prefer his indie stuff to his Marvel stuff, though. Jonathan Hickman for Fantastic Four, another great pick there. We've got Christos Gage. And
two people abstaining from Marvel because they're not reading enough.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. I appreciate them, you know, being upfront about that. But that's... Again, over 41.5% of the 2,255 comics I've got on my list here of what I got this year came from Marvel. So when people are saying, "Well, I'm not getting enough," it's like, but they're putting out so much.
I can kind of relate to that. I've been less and less happy with a lot of the. But you know, the funny thing is most of the things that people are picking outside of the X universe, which I don't get. But pretty much the stuff that people have picked outside of the X-Universe are all things that I am still reading from Marvel.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. Now, on art, I went with Steve Epting for Fantastic Four and FF. I just love his art. I love the way he does that title. And, you know, he's got me, you know, he's got me on Fantastic Four. I love his art.
It's great stuff. Certainly a really good call there.
I had a hard time on art, you know, cause I'm like looking around and there's lots of, I mean, Marvel does have a lot of really great artists working for him.
They do.
You know, so, you know, looking at a lot of that stuff and they have a lot of people had a very, very strong stylistic, artistic vision too. You know, the thing, I give Marvel credit for is that they have so many different art styles featured in their major monthly books that are not kind of the generic standard superhero comic book art style. You know, when you look at Humberto Ramos, Marcos Martin, even ones that I don't like Bobbio or, you know, some of those, I can appreciate the artistry there that is going to hit some people as being their favorite kind of things. And you look at Ariel Olivetti, Olivier Coipel, and Pasquale Ferri. I mean, there's lots of different art styles going on at Marvel.
Yeah, yeah. And they're doing a fairly good job of matching the right art style to the right property. I think there was a period at which they had an equally diverse lineup of art styles, but were mismatching them to the properties, and it really was off-putting in some cases. You know, you put Humberto Ramos on the right title, it's great. You put him on the wrong title. I mean, you put him on, like, Punisher, forget it. It's like, that just wouldn't work.
He's okay on Spider-Man. I like him okay on Spider-Man. I really thought, I thought he was a terrible mismatch on Wolverine.
Yeah.
But other people loved him on Wolverine, so, you know, what do I know? That it's all personal taste. You know, I like the Marcos Martín and, you know, Paulo Rivera, you know, that they stick on Daredevil, you know, doing that book. I think that their style is a nice match for that book.
It's funny you mention that. That was actually my pick for art for Marvel. I think that team really fits that book. And again, they're doing some great stuff with the visual storytelling. In that first issue, I think it was, where the backup had them walking down the subway and it was naturally divided into panels, yet it was one big panel and stuff. That was really impressive. You know, and there's enough things like that that I'm really enjoying that. And again, it's pushing the envelope of how to tell stories, and the art team is challenging themselves and rising to that challenge. There are easier ways they could be drawing those issues, and I appreciate the fact they're not taking the easy way out.
So we've got some choices here, like Stefano Caselli on Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Jerome Opina on Uncanny X-Force, Paco Medina on Ultimate X-Men, Humberto Ramos on Spider-Man. You know, and I can appreciate, you know, that's something that you're easy to love. Lenil Yu, for Superior named here. I think actually Lenil Yu is a far better match for Superior. I liked that far more than I liked him on Civil War.
Yeah.
More Opina. Kyle Hotz for the Heroes for Hire, Fear Itself issues, and Spider Island. It's an interesting one. He's got a very distinctive art style. Sana Takeda for X-23. I do like Sana's art. That's a good one. Emma Rios, Cloak and Dagger, Spider Island Cloak and Dagger. She also, I don't know if it was in 2011, but that the Strange miniseries she did also. You know, that's another one. I think she's a really good match on certain things. You know,
that Strange, I think, was last year.
But Cloak and Dagger, I think that was a good match.
Yeah.
Artist to the property.
She I would agree with that.
That was a nice book. But, and lots of other artists that we didn't name. Marvel has some fabulous talent going on over there. And I think that's, you know, part of what I'm pulling away from Marvel on has nothing to do with intrinsic quality of the Marvel books. It's just they are being written in a way or for an audience mindset that I have kind of moved out of. And so I'm not personally enjoying them, but there's lots of other people that are, you know, so I think that's great. And I think they're doing the right thing because I am not, you know, personally, I am not the demographic Marvel wants to be capturing if they want to make a lot of money, you know, so I don't have a problem with them.
Let's see, hardcore comic collector that was getting, what, 180 comics at one point. Yeah, you're definitely not somebody they want to target.
Well, I'm looking at, you know, guy in his 40s, you know, his more, you know, married guy in his 40s. I mean, that they're writing to a different sensibility.
Yeah, no, they are.
You know, than what I am. And they're doing a good job because there are a lot of really hardcore Marvel fans, although that number of hardcore Marvel fans, though the ones that are still there, are very, very strong. Just from looking at sales numbers over the course of the year, there's less than there were at the beginning of the year. So I would not be surprised if Marvel tries to shake things up in a similar way to DC sometime in 2012.
I will be disappointed if they do not try to do that, because in terms of the sales numbers, they used to have titles that were hanging at that 100,000, 90,000 marks, you know, on a regular basis, be it the Avengers franchise, or the X franchise, or whatever. And these days, they've got a couple of things that are doing over that 60,000 mark by, like, maybe four or five items half of which aren't going to be there the next month, you know, they really don't have that top of the list anymore, and they need to get that back, and they need to change things up to do that. So
I just, you know, when you're putting out the vast quantity of material that Marvel puts out, I think it's hard to keep the quality on everything that high, you know, putting out 100 books a month.
I agree with that, and that's one case where less may be more. If they didn't stretch themselves so thin, they may be able to come out with stronger material.
If they could put out 40 or 50 books a month that are really solid and really just, to me, I don't know. I mean, the core X universe, I like the X-Men characters. I loved X-Men First Class. I loved that movie. The movie was very accessible.
Yeah.
But every time I try to read an X-Men comic, they're impenetrable to me.
They need to change the editing style and storytelling expectations for the X-books to make them accessible. Because, again, I had over 900 Marvel books that I got this year, and pulling out these picks was not easy. These were some of the last ones on my list to fill out, and it's like, oh, gee, I don't know. They're doing, again, that to me, it's a quantity over quality push they've had in 2011. And while that may make their bottom line and stuff, they really need to turn it around and get people uber excited about Marvel. They need to be topping the sales charts, not just for the sales, but for the excitement.
So for me, my character team and storyline title were pretty much lined up, and that's Spider-Man. Peter Parker, Spider-Man.
Thanks for clarifying
and
that.
There's a bunch of them running around, and Amazing Spider-Man is my title.
Totally understandable. Good picks, no question about that. For my character and team, I went with Fantastic Four / FF. This was certainly a banner year for them with the death of the Human Torch, the whole Future Foundation stuff.
Apparent death of the Human Torch.
Well, we were told he died many, many, many times. Marketing stunts aside, Hickman did some really great stuff. He had a lot of storylines in play, enough to spin out to two books now. So certainly it was a great year for that team, or those teams, depending how you want to count it. For storyline and title, I went a little, I'm going to say off the beaten path, which is unfortunate because it's a great book. Thunderbolts, and I went with the Golden Age Thunderbolts / The Ripper Tour, the whole, you know, bouncing around through time storyline that they've got going on now.
That's a great storyline.
It's fun seeing these characters in those different settings. We're getting some great characterization. It's a, I think, really an underappreciated title, and it's a lot of fun. So let's see, what do we have on the forum? We've got another Spider-Man for character and team, X-Factor for storyline and title. Totally understandable. Another FF, Fantastic Four for storyline and title. Character and team, X-Men, storyline title, Uncanny X-Men, The Fear Itself arc. Interesting. Can see that. Character team, Thunderbolts, storyline and title, Venom. That's not one I would have expected. I can see where somebody would be into that, though. It's Remender's doing some good work there. Another pick for FF for the team, Daredevil for the title. Again, not surprises there. Spider-Girl for the character.
I like Spider-Girl.
Yeah. That's one, though, that over the last couple of months has kind of vanished from the front line, so easy to forget about that character, and they did some great stuff there. And then the Heroes for Hire. Again, totally understandable. X-23.
On topic of Heroes for Hire, though, I thought that Abbott and Lenning carried that vibe over very well into that first issue of Villains for Hire.
Yeah, they did. They've done a very smooth transition there. And again, it's expanding on that concept in a very logical and fun way. So they're doing some great work there. Let's see, we got X-23 for character, and then storyline title, Avengers Children's Crusade. That's a good pick. That's one where the bi-monthly frequency is kind of not working as well for me as I'd like. And then Avengers Academy for both character team, storyline, and title for Paul Nolan. It's a great pick. Another underappreciated title. And then that's pretty much what we got on the forum.
I will say on Avengers Children's Crusade, isn't that Jim Chung?
Yeah, great art.
great art in that book. I mean, he is a very good artist, and I think it's just maybe his speed at being able to draw that's putting that at the bi-monthly.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, again, it's understandable, and I like their being up front on that versus it being interminably delayed. But 60 days between issues, roughly, you know, I'm reading a lot of stuff, so hard to keep the story momentum going for me. Now, on the 5 out of 5s for Marvel, it was really not a great year for them in terms of our reviews. I only gave out one, and that was for FF number 1. You gave out 5 for Thanos Imperative, Devastation number 1, Ruse number 1, FF number 1, S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1, and Captain America and Bucky 621, which was essentially the first issue of that title. I mean, they're doing some great stuff, and a lot of what they're doing is very good, but it's not kind of, they're not breaking through that upper level, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that list reminds me of another great artist, and that's Chris Samnee, who did that Thor, the Mighty Avenger title, and also did that run on Captain America and Bucky. He is a great artist.
Yeah. Well, and Brubaker was one I was thinking of on the writing and stuff, because he's done some great work there on the Cap stuff and whatnot. And I think the big challenge for Marvel is they've got a lot of very solid, strong creators, but they're having, I think, a hard time getting, again, those smash hits these days.
I think the hardest time I'm having with Marvel is that the writers that I tend to like the most from Marvel are not their architects, with the exception of Ed Brubaker. I'm really not into most of their architects that they've got. Is Hickman an architect?
I think he might be.
So Hickman and Brubaker I like, but as you know, and nothing against these guys. It's just I like their creator-owned stuff way more than I like their Marvel stuff. But, you know, Jason Aaron, Remender, Bendis, you know, I'm not a big fan of their Marvel stuff.
I think part of it is if editorial would push back a little and help them strengthen the ideas, strengthen the output. They've got a very strong group of architects, very strong creators outside of that group. They're doing a lot of very good stuff. They just need the editorial to tighten up, to give some better guidance, and really kick it up a notch.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they easily could, and I don't think it would take much to, I don't want to say turn Marvel around, they're not in a bad thing, but really kick it into a higher gear and kind of catch up to what DC's doing right now. They don't need to, like, reboot everything or, you know, go to any great lengths like that, but they do need to, they need to make an effort.
So move over to indie?
Yeah. Now, before I was having a problem of, gee, what do I pick? Here I was having a problem of how do I whittle it down? I'm not a huge indie reader. I mean, you know that. You give me a hard time about that every time we do the picks, it seems like, and for good reason, because, I mean, most of what I'm getting is Marvel and DC. My list, 73.39% of the comics I got in 2011, according to this list, were Marvel and DC. So a little less than the industry average for the top 300, but not by a whole lot. And then a lot of those are scattered across some very specific titles here and there. But for a lot of these things, I had multiple picks, and I'm probably going to go with the multiple picks on some of these. So, what did you have for writing?
For writing, I chose Nick Spencer for Morning Glories, primarily. And the reason that I chose, I mean, there are a lot of great writers, a lot of great writing. The reason I chose Nick Spencer, and I think we mentioned this when we reviewed Morning Glories, is that he is writing a book that has so little information revealed, but he's doing it in a way that I love each and every issue. I mean, he's giving just enough, and well, I'm loving that book. It's a great book, and they give him a lot of credit for him. And just like the ideas that he's pulling in like Infinite Vacation, I thought was just like a really cool idea for that. You know, other writers, you know, you got Hickman on Red Wing, and you know, just I tried to pick some of the other, you know, like guys for my other things. They're good writers as well, you know, but like over on Atomic Robo, there's like fabulous writing there. You know, there's just so many great books out there that I enjoy from indie writers, but you know, I had to go with Morning Glories.
I can see that. And there are quite a few writers that I just totally impressed with. Fortunately, a lot of them were in that solo creator category, so I was able to put a couple of them there so I could share the love. Spencer, for me, was the second place guy with Morning Glories, doing some awesome work there, something I really think people ought to be checking out, doing just beautiful work there. For me, third place went to Nathan Edmondson for Who is Jake Ellis. I mean, that was just a really well-done story, and what he's doing, you know, currently on the activity and stuff is of equal quality. So great work from those two. The one I said, you know, I got to go with this guy for the writing, Brian Clevenger for Atomic Robo.
Yeah, I toyed with Clevenger, and I ended up giving Atomic Robo as my favorite character. But, you know, so I just went with one on each, so, you know, but he's doing a great job writing, so I can see that. You know, he does a great job. It's witty, it's well done, it's all ages, consistently enjoyable. He does a great job on Atomic Robo.
Yeah, and that consistently enjoyable, I'd be hard-pressed to name a bad issue of Atomic Robo, you know, out of the entire string of them.
I wasn't that hot on the Dogs of War series, but other than that, he's just hit it out of the park pretty much consistently with everything.
Yeah, yeah.
We got some more Nick Spencer going on here. David Lapham for Crossed Psychopath and Caligula, not books that you would have been reading anyway in any universe. We got Garth Ennis for The Boys, Mignola for BPRD and the related titles. We got Joe Hill for Lock and Key. That's a fabulously written series. Couple of people picked him. We've got Fred Van Lente for Comic Book Comics. Phenomenal,
good
phenomenal
pick.
Series. Very good pick. Who else? We've got Jay Farber for Near Death. Great series. He's also, you know, when he did Dynamo 5, that was a great series. Very talented writer. So all good picks. I think I've read everything that people have chosen as their favorite on indie writing. Great stuff all around. Art for me was a little more challenging. What I went with,
you know, I'm going to give you a hard time.
I know, but you know, the thing is, I picked Nate Simpson for non-player, and the guy can't put out a book to save his life. He put out one issue in the entirety of 2011, but I loved that issue so much. You know, it's just like I was so blown away by that issue, and I've got a print from it that I love, and I had to give it to him for the art. You know, if I was picking other artists, you know, if I was picking multiple people, I could throw out a bunch of other names, but you know, I went with the one, and you know, he's the one for me. You know, just that one issue, just you know, I couldn't get over it. And it's just when I was going down my list of things that I love the art on, I kept coming back to that one, and I'd say, "Man, he only did that one issue, but you know, well, he at least did that one issue."
You know, it's funny because I made a point of not looking at the forum when I was making my picks, so I wouldn't be unduly influenced by them. And this is another case where your top pick was my second place, because I got to agree. You know, Nate Simpson on non-player number one, it was some damn nice art in that issue. But it takes more than a single issue out in a year to get on the top of my list. You know, particularly when that issue came out in April and he's had time. Yes, there are other circumstances, whatever. If this had been stockpiled and he was able to get all six issues out or whatever on a monthly basis, this probably would have been the top of my list, no question about it. And I would like it to be the top of my list 2012. Or 2013, 2014, 2015, whenever he gets around to doing it. But I just, for a single issue, I just can't do that. So the artist I went with was Joe Esima from Morning Glories. because, I mean, the story is outstanding there, and the art keeps pace with it. You know, it tells what it needs to tell. It's clean style. It doesn't get cluttered in detail, and yet doesn't lack the detail where it needs it. So I'm very, you know, pleased with that that series on all categories. And again, definitely recommend it.
Yeah, you know, the thing with that series is, boy, those covers blow me away by Rodin Escaveja or something like that.
Yeah, the covers are outstanding, too.
That guy is going to be doing a series from Image in 2012.
Yeah, I'll definitely be checking that out.
Interiors, which, yeah. You know, I've really got to check that thing out. But I like Joe Eisma's art on Morning Glories also.
Well, and again, with this category, since we had that creator-owned project category, people who are doing both the writing and the art, I said, well, you know, I can show them the love there.
Yes. Yeah. So. I mean, there's lots of great people that do the whole thing from soup to nuts.
Yeah.
You know, we've got some other choices here. What have we got? We've got Joe Benitez for Lady Mechanica. Very nice job. Great work on that. Marcelo Mueller for Lady Death. Lady Death always has great art. And we've got Brian Hurt on Sixth Gun. I like his art there. Ryan Otley on Invincible.
Good pick.
Eric Powell on The Goon. Eric Powell does some great art. We've got, who else? Barbara Ciardo on Route de Maison Rouge. That is really nice art in that book.
Great art on that book.
Ryan Dunleavy for Comic Book Comics. David Hahn on All Nighter. David Hahn has a very clean style. I like it. It's a nice match to All Nighter. I think he does that whole book. That's kind of a creator-owned. He writes and draws that thing. Got Marcio Takara on Incorruptible, and Jeff Moy for Legion of Superheroes and Star Trek.
Gotta agree with that one. And the comment was making Kirk and the boys look like themselves and doing solid storytelling. I mean, that's the job the Moys have been doing, both Jeff and his brother Phil, who's, I think, doing the inking and stuff, they're getting the likenesses down at any angle on these characters without it seeming like either a caricature or a photo reference. And then the Legionnaires, of course, look perfectly, you know, as they should, too. So that was one that I completely support and probably should have put down myself, too, because, great art there, and, man, the storytelling is working for me, too. That's another one. That's Chris Roberson, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris Roberson's writing that.
Doing some great stuff there.
Oh, character or team. This is where I went with Atomic Robo. I love Atomic Robo from Red 5. Great book.
And you went there for the character, right?
For character, yes.
I'm going to go there for the team, because not only Atomic Robo, but his supporting cast is a lot of fun. And it changes up from issue to issue sometimes, but he's usually never played just as the solo guy, and I like the interaction, the whole thing. So again, I completely concur and agree. This is great stuff. Anyone who's not checked out Atomic Robo, go get one of the trades, go get one of the issues. They're all accessible, they're all fun, they're all good. So, I agree.
We've got Skull Kickers, we've got Adam Eve, great under... underutilized character. I love Adam Eve in Invincible. Chew. Well, actually, no, that's storyline title. There's not a choice there. Although,
TBD.
I'll say, Tony Chew. We got the boys from the boys.
TBD. To be digested. Sorry.
Yeah. We got Halcyon. And we've got, who else? BPRD. Good choice.
Mm-hmm.
John Carter from Dynamite.
Interesting.
I like
cool.
I like that one. Reed Gunther and Sterling. That's a good one. That is another title that is very under recognized. But Reed Gunther is a great one. This last issue of Reed Gunther, I think it was number 6, John. If you haven't read Reed Gunther, it was a standalone issue and kind of tells the story of Reed when he was a kid and when he met his bear, Sterling, that is another one you might take a look at in the shop. It's just a great fun book. I mean, you like Atomic Robo, you like these kind of things. It's just a fun, entertaining, all-ages book. We got Twilight Guardian. That's a great pick.
And those four issues came out the first 4 months of the year. So the entire miniseries. And that was one that, you know, when that won pilot season, it's like, this was a great Dunham one. How could they possibly do more? And they did more. And it was great.
Yeah, so that's a great choice. I had forgotten about that one. Shinku, Ron Mars. That's a pretty good choice. I like that series from Image, Vampire Slayer. And then we got the Paradigm as the team from Irredeemable. That's a cool one. There's a lot of great supporting characters that Mark Waid has created in those Irredeemable, Incorruptible books. A lot of fabulous characters that are just kind of filtering around in the background of those stories. For storyline or title, and some of these are kind of blurring together, you know, it's like I recognize someone in one category if I don't hit him in another one. But I picked Elephant Men. And the reason I picked that one for storyline title is because Richard Starkings, you know, he uses a bunch of different artists. He's got a bunch of different stories that are being story threads and storylines that are being told in there. There's a ton of great characters in the Elephant Men comic book series.
Yeah.
You know, both for Hip Flask and Vanity and Obadiah Horn and Sahara and Ebony Hyde. And, you know, there's just a ton of great characters in there. And the different storylines that he runs through and just the different facets of that world. I love that series. Consistently good.
It's some great stuff, no question about that. For me, for storyline and title, I went with the Executive Assistant, the Hit List Agenda from Aspen.
That's a great choice, too.
Because, I mean, that whole thing was really well done. It got me into that world, which I'm enjoying, and I'm going to stick with. So that was a case where, you know, they set out to kind of get people, you know, aware and into this stuff, and it worked, certainly as far as I'm concerned.
We've got Echoes picked here by Josh Fialkov. That ended this year. That was a great story, kind of psychological horror kind of story, that if people like that kind of story can pick that one up in trade. More Hit List Agenda. We've got Pigs, great comic book by Nate Crosby over from Image. This Russian sleeper cell activated from Cuba, and they're coming over to take over the United States. We've got Chew from Image, The Boys. We've got Atomic Robo, great choice.
Mm-hmm.
Severed by Scott Snyder and Attila Futaki. I mentioned that when I was talking about Scott Snyder for writer over at DC. Storyline of Gore that's coming out from GG Studios. We've got Comic Book Comics that finished up this year. That is something that a trade has been solicited for that. I don't know when it's probably come out in February maybe. But anyone who missed Comic Book Comics...
Definitely should pick that up.
Yeah, it's kind of a tongue in, it's historically accurate, but it's just kind of like a fun tongue-in-cheek retelling, kind of like the history around comics, done in a very entertaining fashion. We reviewed an issue of that, didn't we?
Yes, I think we did number 5, maybe? Yeah, we did number 5.
We got Morning Glories picked here. Kirby Genesis.
Yeah, I can see that.
And Walking Dead. I love Walking Dead. I picked that for a couple of years, so I was kind of spreading the love around on that one. But a lot of great stuff. Next category I threw in was webcomic, and a lot of people kind of just passed on that because they don't read that many webcomics, although I've started this year reading more webcomics, and there are some great ones. We've got links to a lot of them in the forum thread here, but I picked Battle Pug by Mike Norton, which he does a great job on this book. It's just this barbarian with this rides around in this giant pug dog. having these kind of humorous adventures. It's pretty hilarious. I really like this series.
Well, Mike Norton's a great guy, too, so hard to go wrong with any of the stuff he's working on. He's a very talented artist and very funny, so I can see that. For me, this was a category that was tough because I really don't read that many webcomics. So I went with The Gutters by Ryan Somer. And it's funny, it's topical, and since I don't read many webcomics, it kind of won by default, but it's good. Sometimes a little snarkier, a little more profane than I would care for, but, you know, usually it's very much on the nose. I mean, a recent one was how DC's apparently talking about getting a new logo, and he suggested one that was, you know, along the lines of, you know, DC, all the creators who worked on this title have probably already been fired. Because, again, it seems like, you know, by the time you get the comic, they've already announced creative team shifts and stuff like that. And he's got a couple others that were pretty good. It comes out Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's like a full comic book page. You know, I get the email, so I check it out. It's one that I got the Omnibus or whatever at San Diego Con, and the thing was just huge. So that was my pick.
Let's see some of the other ones we've got here. We've got...
We don't have many. A lot of people.
We don't have many. A lot of people don't seem to read them. Although we've got another Gutters.
Yeah.
We've got Our Valued Customers. I love Our Valued Customers. These are single panel gags that basically, if you click on the link there, John, this guy who does it works in a comic shop, and he just, you know, puts in these just hilarious things that he hears people in the comic shop say, and they're just, you know. One image of some, you know, comic fan saying some. Let's see what the latest one is here. I'm going to click on it. They always are titled, you know, something like this one is To His Friend. And this guy is saying, every time I see someone with an iPad, I wish my superpower was that I could make them drop and break it. And you got Regarding the Tintin Movie. The Tintin artist is so lucky those comics only came out like 2 years ago and he already got a movie. Somebody's like woefully ignorant of Tintin's history. They got one regarding Teen Titans while shopping for her teenage son. A team of teenage superheroes? Seems like someone forgot how horrible and lazy teenage kids really are. It's just, you know, it comes out several times a week and you just read the one panel. It's just funny. So I like that one. We got Freak Angels. That ended during the year. I love that strip. I tended to buy, you know, that one was by Warren Ellis and Paul Duffield. Great post-apocalyptic story set in the UK. And I bought that in trade paperback format because each time they got a trade paperback full, they put out a book under Avatar. And I read that in hard copy format. And someone picked Awesome Hospital, and I had never heard of this one. So I clicked through on it. Wow. It's awesome. it's really funny. It's just, you got this hospital with these awesome doctors like Dr. Guitar Solo and Dr. Dirt Bike, who like will ride his dirt bike and do a flip over a patient and, you know, with a scalpel in his hand, do surgery while he's jumping over him or something.
Yeah, I was reading through some of that this morning. It's very over the top, and it's out there, but it's funny. It's well done.
So that's on my list of webcomics I'll read now. So I'm really glad that one got pointed out. Least I Could Do has been picked out, and that's by Ryan Somer also, who does Gutters. And when I checked that one out, what was kind of funny was I went back to the first one, and I guess it's been around since 2003.
At least I could do. First, that's also been collected into trades.
The first artist was not much to my taste, and the second one was a lot better. But Lar D'Souza, who's the current artist on it, has been doing it since 2005.
Wow.
So there's like 7 years worth of Lar D'Souza drawn strips on this that you can check out online. And that's another one that I'm adding into my webcomic rotation. Great book, great series. But I'm glad I put that category on because I learned of several new series that I have not seen before. There's so many.
Now, in the
comics out there.
In the past, I might have put down PvP, but since that stopped going, you know, print, I stopped reading. And it was like 2 years behind when it did that, so I never... I think I tried to catch up at one point. The art style evolved and got better. It's just I usually don't follow webcomics. You know, and frankly, if the Gutters wasn't emailing me every time a new strip went up, I probably wouldn't follow that.
The one thing that a lot of these people should do, and they don't all have it, is, I mean, well, either you get an email or just make an RSS feed. You know, and I'm surprised that a lot of these, like The Least I Could Do, does not have an RSS feed. Awesome Hospital does not seem to have an RSS feed. Battle Pug does, though. And, you know, the ones that I... Mystery Solved is another great one by by Zach, although this, you know, he has different artists. So, you know, his stories are great, but the my enjoyment of his arcs wax and wane depending on my enjoyment of the art, the artists that he's got going on there. But, you know, any webcomic person who's doing webcomics, they should really put an RSS feed on there, because I just have the ones that I read in my my feed reader, and that way when a new one comes out, it pops up on my RSS feed reader, and then I know to read that one. Another great one was Spacetime Condominium by Dave Dwanch. He's kind of taking a break right now. He finished off a storyline about a month ago. Subculture by Kevin Freeman is a great one. New strips on that every Tuesday and Friday. And again, you know, there's RSS feeds on those. So I, when new ones come out, I'm kind of notified about it.
Yeah, that's a smart move.
It just helps me remember. So lots of great stuff going on in web comics. And, you know, I'm sure there's tons more that, you know, we have not seen. But, you know, if you haven't checked out webcomics, check out some of these ones that people are picking as their favorite of the year. Maybe you'll like them. Next category new for this year is a favorite creator-owned project by a solo creator. This is a really hard one because there are so many. So many just singular creative visions out there. You know, it's like one person's doing the whole thing. I ended up going with... Usagi Yojimbo by Stan Sakai. That's my absolute top favorite.
I could totally understand that. I think that is an excellent pick, and it was one of the six I put down, because I had a hard time picking on this one. Certainly what he's doing on Usagi is just brilliant work. Marine Man by Ian Churchill, great stuff. Gotta mention Sergio Aragonés' Funnies. That's brilliant stuff, too.
Yeah, absolutely great.
The Breed 3 by Jim Starlin. Excellent stuff. Two others that I just can't not mention. One is Loving Capes by Tom Zoller. Excellent, excellent stuff. He's also got a habit of giving away issues on Free Comic Book Day that are the current issue or whatever. I mean, it's fun stuff. It's a Mad About You with superheroes kind of a thing. You know, Lois and Clark as a romantic comedy. And then Brody's Ghost by Mark Crilly. Which has primarily been coming out in like a digest format. But it's got a single issue coming out soon. Again, just some great stuff. So I think part of what makes this such a strong category is when you've got one guy doing the writing and the art, you're guaranteed for them to be firing on the same cylinders, going in the same direction and stuff. You don't have two competing visions and the compromise of the story that comes out of it. You get what they want, or at least as best they can deliver on that. So it's a very strong category for me. Again, those are the ones that I pick. Narrowing it down beyond that would be really, really tough. So yeah, that's what I got.
And other picks off of those are all great picks. We got another Marine Man. We've got Habibi by Craig Thompson, which I am really looking forward to getting. But I ordered the autographed version, and it still has not come from DCBS. Who else do we got here? Eric Powell on The Goon. Rachel Rising by Terry Moore. Echo, that he finished this year, was another great, another great project. Some mangas that I had, Nadoro Hidoro and Ku Hayashida from Viz Manga. Okay. That's from our manga expert, Al Sparrow. We got Sergio Aragonés funnies. We've got more Rachel Rising. Bunch of Rachel Rising.
Yeah, that one was very popular on the forum.
And John Byrne's Next Men. I can kind of like go down my pull list for Image Comics and pick a lot of really great ones, you know, off of this. And just, you know, there's so many, as you said, of these series that are by a single creator that kind of does it all. You know, this is one where I'm kind of with you on it. You know, like, had Nate Simpson actually put out more than one issue, I would have put that on here. But it's just he didn't have enough. But, I mean, the art kind of stands on its own. But as far as, you know, solo project, I couldn't give it, you know, on that. But let's see, what other kinds of things do we have?
Well, it's funny because with these creator-owned projects and stuff by solo creator, most of these are guys on my list that if they were to come up with something else, okay, fine, I'll get it, you know?
Right.
If Tom Zoller wanted to do damn near anything, I'll check it out. Whether I'll stick with it or not depends how well he executes on that. If he can find something that he's as great on as Loving Capes, awesome, you know?
Like, for instance, Jimmy Robinson on Bomb Queen. I mean, he does everything on that. That's a great series. Who else? I guess there are a lot that have a writer and an artist. You know, there's, like, great series like Gladstones. Mm-hmm. From Image, that's got a writer and an artist. It's not the same guy. I like Hack Slash. That's, you know, a separate writer and artist. I mean, we've named a lot of them that are singular visions. And I think the last one will be our interesting topic. Favorite overall publisher.
Before we get to that, let's go for the 5 out of 5s we gave on the indie section.
Okay, sure.
For me, it was Infinite Vacation number 1 from Image, Uncle Scrooge number 400 from Boom Studios, Love and Capes Ever After number 1 from IDW, Twilight Guardian number 2 from Image Top Cow, Non-Player number 1 from Image, Gladstone School for World Conquerors number 1 from Image, Foster Broussard number 1 from Red Comics, Executive Assistant Iris number 0 from Aspen, Atomic Robo and the Ghost of Station X number 1 from Red 5, Morning Glory is number 14 from Image Comics, and Breed 3 number 7 from Image Comics. You gave, let's see, 5 out of 5s to Infinite Vacation number 1 from Image, Uncle Scrooge number 400 from Boom Studios, Love and Capes Ever After number 1 from IDW, Twilight Guardian number 2 from Image Top Cow, Comic Book Comics number 5 from Evil Twin Comics, Non-Player number 1 from Image, Gladstone School for World Conquerors, number 1 from Image. Terry Morse Echo, number 30 from Abstract Studio. Executive Assistant Iris, number 0 from Aspen. Atomic Robo and the Ghosts of Station X, number 1 from Red 5. Sergio Aragonés Funnies, number 3 from Bongo. Who is Jake Ellis, number 5 from Image. Star Trek Legion of Superheroes, number 2 from IDW. Morning Glories, 14 from Image. And Breed 3, number 7 from Image Comics. So actually, quite a bit of overlap on our 5 out of 5s for the indie section, which is kind of interesting because we have fairly different tastes there. But good stuff. So yeah, the favorite publisher, that is to me really a cut and dry, you know, situation. Although I came up with a different thing than you did. For me, DC Comics, no two ways about it. The New 52 was and continues to be a game changer. The Day and Date Digital, the holding the line at $2.99, they've really upped their game this year. And they've been at the forefront of a lot of the major shifts in the industry. So both creatively and business-wise, they're going all out, and I hope to see them continue to do that in 2012. They, I think, were a defining force this year in comics.
Yeah, for me, I couldn't give it to DC just because they had such a weak beginning of the year. And, you know, I fully admit that they did a lot of things. But even with their relaunch, I mean, they've had rotating creative teams. A lot of the stories have been, I'm trying to think of the best word, but, you know, it's just decompressed is probably the best way to put it. You know, they have this almost pathological inability to tell a complete story in four issues that have been published in most of their books. And while on the business side, you know, reinventing themselves and going day and date digital and all that kind of stuff, I got to give them props for, you know, as far as just the pure, in my opinion, quality of the stuff that I've been enjoying, I had to go with Image.
I can see that.
They have put out so many titles that I have loved, and, you know, just percentage wise, you know, things that I get from Image that I absolutely love is a way higher percentage than from any other publisher. I mean, of publishers that put out a multiple of things, you know, it's like, for instance, you know, Abstract Studios has the highest percentage as well as a lot of other people, because they put out one book that I love.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you know,
but that's a different category of publisher. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different category of publisher. When you have like just a line, you know, like I look at IDW, they put a lot of great stuff I like, but then they put out a lot of stuff that I skip, you know. And Dynamite, there's some stuff I really like, but, you know, then they kind of overdrive a lot of things. And, you know, Dark Horse, I love a lot of things, but a lot of stuff is not my cup of tea. Whereas Image, boy, you know, I get so many Image books and I consistently like them. And I appreciate that they have such a different publishing model from the other publishers, and they have made a mechanism, they've provided a mechanism for so many of these creators to put out creator-owned books that they maybe wouldn't be able to put out at all, even though a lot of them don't sell that well and they go away. At least they get a chance to get them out there, that if they were trying to do it on their own, they wouldn't have that opportunity.
Yeah. No, I can totally understand Image. Image of late has been doing really well. They've been coming out with a lot of strong properties. Not all their stuff comes out on time, but they're doing a lot better in that regard. It's not like everything is chronically late. You know, they've got a lot of things that come in every month like clockwork, and they should get props for that. So it really comes down to how well can the individual creator do.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, when you're talking creator-owned stuff, I mean, certain creators are going to put their stuff out on time and other creators are not. When it's not a publisher-owned thing where they're going to, like, fire somebody off a book and put somebody else on it to get it out on time, there's not a whole lot Image can do on most of their stuff, you know, to get a creator to actually, you know, put the book out.
But really, their only choice is to stockpile, and that's not viable right. In a lot of cases.
Right. We've got... you know, ones we would expect. We got a bunch of DCs. We got a bunch of Images. We got several Marvels. Dark Horse crept on there. Got Evil Twin Comics. Got the LA Rabbit was kind of voting a comic book comics ticket there for a lot of his indie stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly Image and DC. You know, there's. Overwhelmingly Image in DC as the two clear front runners. I'm without counting them individually, I'd say they're relatively even, just kind of glancing through.
What gets me is we had, I think, two picks for Marvel, but we also had a couple of people bowing out of the Marvel section entirely because they weren't really reading any. And that surprises me. You know, we had as many people bowing out of Marvel as we had saying it was the publisher of the year. Actually, more people right. bowing out, I think. And again, Marvel accounts for roughly half the sales of the top 300 most months. You know, a little under these days, but still. For that many readers to say, you know, I really not reading anything or anything of substance from this publisher, is to me very surprising.
Well, maybe we just don't have that many listeners that kick that up a notch in 2012 as you start talking about more Marvel books that you think are really good coming out from Marvel that I don't read. Because I think since I've been pulling back on Marvel, there's just less and less variety in our Marvel thing, which is why we want to change the format in that direction a little bit. Because like I said, I think Marvel does put out some really good stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, even so, we've talked about, you know, 52 or so Marvel comics this year. you know, individual issues and stuff. So it's not like we've been slacking on that, and it's not like we're going through just the same couple or whatever. I think we're giving Marvel a decent representation, granted a little weak on the X franchise and a few things like that, but even so, we've covered stuff from the Ultimate line, we've covered stuff from the X line. The fact that we've got a lot of people saying, you know, they're just not interested in Marvel, to me, is a reflection of that lowering sales trend and how, you know, they used to top out most of their, you know, with things well over 60,000, and these days that's, you know, only a couple items go above that for them. You know,
well, how many people that read Marvel are just hardcore Marvel fans, you know? Since our format of the show is Marvel, DC, and indie books, if you're a hardcore Marvel fan, and that's pretty much all you read, you would never listen to our show. You know, it's just,
I wouldn't say they would never listen, but I could certainly see where only a third of the content might be appealing, and if they're vehemently opposed to other stuff, it certainly would beg the question, why would they listen?
There's plenty of shows that focus on Marvel for people who are hardcore Marvel fans. They would, I would imagine, if I was a hardcore Marvel fan, and you know, I'm one of like these guys that I saw at the shop yesterday that wouldn't dirty themselves to touch a DC comic, you know, it's like, I'm certainly not going to listen to a show that devotes a third of its time to DC comics, you know?
If only we provided show notes to where they could tune in at the beginning of the Marvel section and out afterwards. Oh, wait, we do. I see your point, though. It just seems that a lot of the people who I think are reading Marvel are also reading other stuff, so I don't know how big that Marvel-exclusive audience may be. And maybe it's bigger than I give credit to. But we didn't have anyone really bow out of the indie section saying they're not reading much there, or out of DC saying they're not reading much there. So for multiple people to have done that at Marvel is, to me, very indicative of a sign that Marvel needs to up their game next year.
Yeah. They got to make some changes.
Yeah.
So I'm almost curious on Marvel, just on the topic there. It's like, is Marvel like... it seems like they're eliminating the Max line. Punisher Max is ending. I think Deadpool Max, those are the only two that were left. I think the Max line is pretty much going away from Marvel. And I don't know if that's like a Disney influence or what.
I could see where it could be, yeah. I mean, it doesn't really fit their kind of corporate image and stuff. But, you know, I don't know if that's a direct result of that or not. I really question if this X-Men versus Avengers push in 2011 is a smart move or not. I don't think either franchise is so strong that it'll boost the other one. I think it may either polarize their fan base or push people out that are only, you know, partially committed to one of those franchises. And it's going to go most of the year, I think, because isn't that like a 12-issue thing?
Yeah, it's bi-monthly, though. But you got the run-up to it, which is that
bi-weekly,
for bi-weekly, sorry. Yeah. You know, you got that run-up for January and February still, I guess. When does it start officially? It starts March or April?
I'm thinking March, but I'm not sure. I could be wrong on that.
Is it like a zero issue that was solicited or a one issue that was solicited?
I would have to go pull up my Marvel previews and take a look. Fortunately, I have that right here. So let's go flip to the page that lists everything, and X-Sanction number 3 is listed here, and that ships at the beginning of February. So how many issues does that go? Is that a 3-issue or a 4-issue?
I have no idea. I lost interest in that after the first one.
That's right. You're not getting either side of the thing.
Nope. Yeah, I pulled out of the X-Men and Avengers franchises, so very little need to.
It's 3 of 4, so that'll at least be going through through March. So April will be when the thing kicks into high gear.
So April, May, June, July, August, September. So, I mean, that's most of the year.
Yeah.
On that thing.
So they're,
with
they're
any luck, that's going to be their only event of the year. And they're not going to be trying to run two parallel events or something.
Yeah. But they're committing heavily to that, and I really question if that's a smart move.
It also kind of, if they're in the midst of that, then that kind of tells you that if they're going to do some kind of a reboot or retwizzle, it probably is not going to happen till after that, which would be right around September, which is the month that DC did theirs. So,
yeah,
you know, are they going to try to do that?
That would be a funny 1 year later sort of a thing. Yeah.
They could call it 1 year later.
Yeah.
Or not.
I think they'd be better off tightening up what they've got versus a reboot. But
yeah, I don't think they would do a reboot. I mean, DC didn't call theirs a reboot.
No, it was. But it was. And that's I think a legitimate complaint about it too, is that they didn't fess up and you know, be upfront about the fact that it is indeed a reboot. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that did it. It was, you know, in general, it was a very interesting and good year for comics, I thought. I mean, there were certain things that, you know, it started off slow, but it ended on a really strong note, I thought.
Yeah, certainly, like you said, it was a slow start, but a lot of things happened, a lot of major shifts, both content-wise and business-wise, making it for a very interesting year, and one that I think is going to give 2012 a much stronger start than 2011 had. So, should be fun to see how that turns out.
Yep, very good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.